But the degree to which the news is being made available by our delegates is remarkable. I recall the Washington Disarmament Conference of 1921-22, when for days the American press had to rely for its news in the main on the spokesman of the British delegation. It is not necessary here for an American reporter to go to a foreign source for his news. Frequent press conferences are being held by the delegation. Official statements must, of course, come from the chairman, but any delegate is free to express his individual views. The change from the old days is refreshing. The second notable feature I have in mind is the presence of a great number and variety of consultants. 42 organizations are represented in this manner at the conference by invitation of our government. 200 others have their agents here on the fringes. Thus have the processes of diplomacy been democratized. As nearly as is possible, it seems to me, this conference is working in a goldfish bowl. Will it succeed in its effort to frame a new world charter? The answer is the same I gave the other day. The outlook for a large measure of success, despite the difficulties still in the way, is excellent. A charter not drastically different from that drawn up at Dumbarton Oaks will be drafted. In the words of an official close to the American delegation, we are over the hump. The conference will succeed because there is a grim determination to make it succeed. And now, Dr. Usher.
Easily the most important event of a day filled mainly by closed committee meetings and by the frantic efforts of the delegations to finish their material before the deadline expires at midnight, was the British press conference held late this afternoon by Viscount Cranborne, Secretary of State for the Dominions. He disclosed the hitherto jealously guarded text of the British proposal for a new chapter in the Constitution on trusteeships. It was, he said, and perhaps this is important, the result of discussions begun at Yalta and not an outgrowth of discussions at Dumbarton Oaks. It was thus not a part of the original plan before the conference. He compared the British and American proposals, and as the latter have not yet been made public, it will be informative to give his comparison of the two on this eagerly awaited chapter. The differences are matters of detail, he stressed, and not at all of objectives. Both hold that the only purpose is the welfare of the people of the territory, and in case of strategic bases, of their best use. The new system differs from the mandate system of the League of Nations, chiefly in allowing strategic areas to be fortified. This was forbidden in the mandate system. Both nations strongly approve of fortification. They differ over what constitutes a strategic or non-strategic area and of how to handle the former. The United States would make the trustee in the strategic area responsible to the Security Council, which alone is charged with military and naval affairs. The British point out that even in strategic areas, there will be economic and social questions over which the Security Council has no jurisdiction. The Viscount thought that the United States was dealing chiefly with tiny islands with few people, whereas the British hold that larger areas could also be deemed strategic. Even the smallest would grow, and the Constitution should provide for all foreseeable facts. The British would like a sharp division of functions between the Trusteeship Council and the Security Council, which the Americans think is not necessary at this time, but rather something to be worked out later. The British feel also that the nature of the trusteeship should differ with the character of the area. While the Americans think that a definite set rule without much variation is possible, expedient, more easily understood and interpreted. One explicit provision will create debate. The British provide that no existing League of Nations mandates exercise now by members of the United Nations should be altered without agreement of the mandatory power. As Mr. Abbott of Australia said yesterday, the trusteeship system will be a revision and modification of the mandate system. And this seems to be agreed true by many states here. The British think so. As a matter of fact, it is simply true. Except for some points, the trustee system and the mandate are the same. The biggest change is in name. The next is the fortification of mandates and their use as a basis for enforcement of the armistice and of the peace. Probably it will be easier all round if there is no general rearrangement or allotment of all mandates. But the Jews in Palestine and others elsewhere will oppose this. Syria was a French mandate, but Monsieur Bidault disclosed the other day the surprising news to me that both Syria and Lebanon are here as member nations at French request. The usual Hindu Congress advocate wanted to know whether trusteeships would affect India. I say, ejaculated the Viscount, you don't think India is a mandate, do you? As to the responsibility of the Trusteeship Council, the United States would have it report direct to the Assembly. The British would prefer to see it report direct to the Economic and Social Council, which itself is responsible to the Assembly. This might be an actual experience convenient, especially as both powers wish to emphasize the welfare aspect of trusteeships. In general, too, the British would define the functions of the Trusteeship Council and of the trustees in general terms, without rigid language, making the provisions flexible and subject to future definition and change. The American delegation seems to be afraid that unless specific terms are included now, it may be difficult to define the functions later, and many loopholes will appear. Both plans seem feasible, expedient, and useful. Whichever prevails, no vital difficulties will be experienced. This is the first official disclosure of the proposals on a subject which has awakened so much interest here and throughout the world. It has been eagerly awaited with as much anticipation as any point yet brought up. I had an interesting experience this morning at the Philippine press conference. There I saw the small nations in action and heard some detailed proposals for achieving their ends. Some refer to the composition of the Security Council. The Philippines wish to base the choice on geographical districts. One member from North or South or Central America, one from South America, one only from Europe, one from Africa, one from Western Asia, by which I learned in response to my question they mean what is usually called the Near and Middle East, and one from the Western Pacific Community, or as we say, the Far East. This puts Asia in the foreground, and Europe very much in the discard. On voting in the Security Council, the Philippines would, on ordinary matters, require a majority vote of the great powers and a majority vote of the other six members voting separately. On decisions to maintain the peace and requiring the use of armed forces, they would insist on an affirmative vote by 4 out of 5 great powers and 5 out of 6 smaller. This would abolish the veto by 1 of the great powers, but as the press instantly pointed out, substitute for it a veto power by 2 of the small. Seemed to the reporters that it nullified completely all chance of rapid action against an aggressor. It transferred the veto from the great to the small, certainly no thinkable gain. The other proposal prevented the domination of the council by Europe, but substituted for it domination by Asia, another gain, which is no gain at all. The Philippine proposals merely reverse the picture without improving it.
From the studios in the NBC building in San Francisco, KSD has presented the comments and observations of Charles G. Ross, contributing editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and Dr. Roland G. Usher, KSD news analyst and head of the Department of History at Washington University. For more news, the United Nations Conference at San Francisco, listen to Richard Harkness at 10:45 tonight on KSD. We return you now to the KSD studios in the Post-Dispatch building in St. Louis.